Happy Monday. Welcome back to the show. We are on episode 141 and we are going to go back in time 11 years because 11 years ago, I was a first-time mom writing her birth plan. So I'm going to go over that birth plan that apparently I saved from 11 years ago. And I just want to tell you, if you are a first-time mom and you're listening to this, like, you deserve a pat on the back. Give yourself a pat on the back. The fact that you are taking the time to seek out information, to listen to podcasts, to hopefully take birth education, to be reading the books, that is more than a lot of first-time moms do. And when I was a first-time mom, first pregnancy, first birth, 12 years ago, 11 years ago, Instagram didn't have a birth, like, birthy account on there. Instagram was only food photos. I have no idea how I got informed, because actually this is a pretty good birth plan. I also was very into attachment parenting. I was 100% on board with breastfeeding, and I thank my lucky stars that somehow I knew about a lot of these things. Of course, I can thank my mother, right? She told me about unmedicated births. She had unmedicated births. I watched her breastfeed my sister when I was 7, right? So it is true that the way you choose to birth and what you are choosing to get educated and informed on is going to not only positively impact your birth, but your children's birth as well. Every time we choose to do better for ourselves, we're passing that gift on to our children. So I'm happy that you're here, and I hope that you learned something from this episode. It's kind of all over the place. I give a lot of different advice in here, so there's definitely some great tips, but basically we're going to walk through this birth plan that I wrote over a decade ago. Let's get to it. This is not your average birth podcast because you are not the average mom. Welcome to Unapologetically Unmedicated. I'm your host, Fierce Lizzie, and I am unapologetic when it comes to normal, physiologic, unmedicated birth. I want you to have your best birth because I know that an empowered birth leads to an empowered motherhood. If you want to be the boss of your birth and do birth your way, it's time to get informed, educated, and empowered. So this should be a fun episode because I am going over the birth plan that I wrote exactly 11 years ago, probably almost exactly, because at the time that I'm recording this, it's April 20th, and that was my due date. It even says on the birth plan, EDD, April 20. And my daughter's turning 11 this year. So in honor of her birthday, happy birthday, baby girl, we're going to go over the birth plan that I wrote. And I didn't even know I had this, but last weekend, my daughter was looking in our, kind of in our multi-purpose room, I'll call it. That's where I'm sitting in right now. In the closet, we have a bunch of board games. And this closet has like two shelves. It has like the upper shelf and then has like another upper shelf. And on the second upper shelf, there was a pink box. And my youngest daughter was like, "Mommy, what's in that pink box up there?" And I was like, "Oh, you know, that's Millie's baby stuff. Like, that's her baby box," which I'm sorry to my other children. There's like a lot of stuff in my first baby's baby box. I never finished a baby book, so at least all of them have no baby books. But there's a lot more stuff in my oldest's baby box than I don't even know if my other two have stuff in there. But I pull down this box and I open it up and there's a bunch of random stuff in there. The umbilical cord is in there in the shape of a heart. There's like every single card from her baby shower. There's all this stuff in there. Her baby hat, her little hospital wristband. Well, I also find my birth plan, and it was such a delight to find. Like, it was just so cool to be able to look back in time and see where my thought process was before going into my first birth. Now, I do have another podcast episode. I think it's called, I'll link to it in the show notes, but I think it's called like My First Birth and What I Know Now or something like that. And I talk about what happened in my first birth and the things I would do differently. But here's the thing is I had no recollection of this birth plan and what I wanted in my birth. Here's what I always thought. Every time I talk about my first birth, I say, oh, I didn't prepare. I read one book. I did take the hospital's birth class and I didn't know all of my options. And so of course, you know, I ended up, spoiler alert, if you've been around, you know this, but I ended up having a hospital birth with no epidural, but I did start Pitocin. I did spontaneously go into labor. So at the end of that birth, it felt really empowering because I was like, yay, I reached my goal of having an unmedicated birth. And I didn't honestly see anything wrong with it. I didn't see anything wrong with that birth until I become a doula and I become a birth educator and I start supporting birth and I start researching more about birth, right? It wasn't really until 5 years later that I realized there was a lot that happened in that birth that I would not want to happen to you or any of my clients or myself if I were to get pregnant again or my daughters, right? So that's a great episode to go back and listen to. It might be very similar to this episode. I have no script. All I have in front of me is this birth plan that I found in my closet. I'm gonna go through it line by line and tell you about it. What I think in terms of, would that be something I would put on my birth plan now? And was that respected or not in my birth? And anything that I would do differently. So this is a great learning process since a lot of you are probably first-time moms writing your first birth plan, not really knowing what to expect, right? Here's the crazy thing though I was getting to. I always thought I was not informed. And when I found this birth plan, I was like, what? I was really informed. So the book I read must have talked about these things. I have another episode where I go back to the book I read and I look through. And the book that I read, it's the Hypnobirthing, Marie Mongan. What's it called? I have it right here. Hold on. The author is Marie Mongan. Hypnobirthing, the Mongan Method. In the episode, I talk about like that it didn't prepare me enough because it didn't. I didn't get the birth that I wanted. All of that to say that the birth plan means nothing. Nothing, 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 nothing. What will make the most impact is, do you know how to advocate? Does whoever's on your team, your doula, your mom, your husband, do they know how to advocate? Do they know what you want? Is your provider in line? Is your birthplace in line with your birth plan? Do you know your birth rights? Because you can say no to anything, but you know what? Knowing that fact, if you didn't know that, hello, we need to talk about that. You are allowed to say no to anything you want. But knowing that is not enough because the hospital can be coercive and manipulative and tell you, well, you can say no, but you really need this. So you really need to understand how physiology works. You need to understand what the common red flags are. What is the hospital using to be manipulative? What is a true emergency versus not? And that is what you learn inside of Unmedicated Academy. Okay. So having the perfect birth plan don't mean S-H-I, because this was a near perfect birth plan for a freaking first time mom. Okay. It makes me a little mad. It makes me a little mad because I always say, like, if I would have just known about home birth and prioritized that for the first, I would have never had the next ones in the hospital. It was because I had a hospital birth where I thought I had a wonderful birth experience, right? Because I didn't end up getting an epidural, but like it really wasn't a wonderful birth experience. And there was some trauma that happened, right? Which I talk more about in the in that other episode that I'll link, but it might come up here as we kind of work through. But so let's jump to it. So I got my nice little heading there. It's got my name, my date of birth. I gave birth in a military hospital, so it has my daughter's dad's social security number on there. And it has my estimated due date, and that's all that's in the heading. And then there's a little title. This is so funny because this is how my birth plan template right now is. There's a heading with all the information, and then there's like one spot where you kind of summarize up what you want, and kind of like an overarching kind of goal there. And that's what I have on this, on the birth plan that I do with my clients and with my Academy moms. Also, that's another podcast episode that you can listen to. I'll link to that one in the show notes too, but you can get my template, and it's a Google Doc, so you can edit it. And in the podcast episode, I walk you through the template. So I'll link that one too. I'll link my template and my birth, my first birth and what I know now episode. Just making a little note, otherwise I'll forget. I'm sure you've listened to the podcast before and I've been like, oh, I'll put that in the show notes. And then I forget. So my like little topic sentence, I don't know, my overarching goal here on this birth plan that I'm looking at, it says, the following are my birth preferences. Mistake number one right there. I prefer a natural birth, but the number one goal is for baby and mommy to be healthy and happy. I am willing to consider any interventions that are medically necessary, medically necessary in the case of an emergency. Okay, so it is really unfortunate that we have to put this disclaimer. Like, no, duh, you want a healthy baby. That's everyone's goal. That shouldn't have to be stated, that if you are going to say no to things, that you have to follow up with like, but I want a healthy baby. Like, yeah, that's why we're declining unnecessary interventions, right? But the big mistake here is this is a mindset thing. It doesn't really matter if it's written on your birth plan or not. I am 100% against calling it a birth preferences, and 100% for calling it your birth plan, and for you to have autonomy over it, and for you to say, nope, like, this is my plan. Plans can change. Yes, you can change from your birth plan. There is nothing that says if it says birth plan at the top that you can't change it. Like, that is just not true. Somewhere along the line, we've been brainwashed to believe that birth is an emergency and, oh my gosh, anything could happen at any moment. And this is actually true. This is true about birth. No two births are the same. Birth has a wide range of normal, but our medical system has taken this truth about birth, that birth, it's unexpected. We don't know when it's going to be long. We don't know when it's going to be fast. We don't know, you know? They've taken that and used it as a coercive, manipulative scare tactic to mean like, well, you don't know what's going to happen, so you better leave it up to us. And those better be preferences because we are in charge, right? And that is, could not be further from the truth. Okay, so that's the first thing that's kind of wrong on here, was that my mindset was, these are my preferences, but if the hospital says I need something else, then I'm going to do something else. Well, guess what? The hospital said I needed something else. The hospital is always going to prioritize their routines and their procedures and their liability over what you want. So you really, really, really need to understand your birthrights, and you also need to not be a people pleaser and not care what someone at work thinks about you making decisions and being a decision maker in your birth when you only give birth 2, 3, 4 times. You don't get to redo this. Do not let someone push you around just because they're at work and they have a procedure to follow or policies to follow. That policy is for them to offer consistent care to every woman that walks through that door. Well, guess what? You are not the average woman walking into the hospital because you want an unmedicated birth. So you're going to do things differently, and they're going to have to suck it up and do it for you. Oh, I get so fired up about this. It makes me so mad. So what happens when I don't have a script? I just get wild. Okay. The next little thing on my birth plan, it says, I would like to send a Red Cross message to my husband who is deployed, and it has all of his like deployment information there, his troop and the address and the base that they're at and all that stuff. So yeah, I gave birth without him there. My mom was there, thankfully. But yeah, he wasn't there, and he didn't actually even meet her until she was 6 months old. So sometimes I get this story like, oh, well, I have to induce to make sure my husband is there. I'm like, really? Do you? You don't get a lot of like empathy from me, because not that like, I'm not trying to be sassy, but like been there, done that without my partner there. So anyways, I still wouldn't have picked an induction probably. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I didn't know as much then as I do now, but I do talk about spontaneous labor, I think, on here. So let's look at this. Then I have it split up, the birth plan, into sections. So the sections are, it says during admission, I prefer, and then there's bullet points, four bullet points. So this whole thing is one page, very short and sweet, which is good. This is how I teach moms inside of the academy, a short and sweet birth plan, very to the point. So it says during admission, during first stage labor, during birthing, following birth, for baby. And then it says, I prefer, again, with the preferences, right? And there's only a few bullet points for each. So I feel like I did a good job with that, but I do think there are some things that I kind of left out. So on the birth plan that I use with my clients, we actually talk about like early active transition. I think actually I'm not 100% sure actually what the titles are, but I have it broken up, I think, into a few more categories, but I could be wrong. So, okay. So let's look at the admissions. During admission, I prefer, and these are kind of the things that I would assume, I'm going to read through these in a second, that are like kind of set up things, right? So it says on here to self-hydrate and decline IV prep. So I didn't want a saline lock. Did I get a saline lock? You better believe I did. Sure did. I have no idea what that conversation was like. I will say the next bullet point says to go into labor naturally and try non-medical induction techniques rather than being induced. And so I'll just give you a little background here with my first, my waters broke at home at like, I think it was like 7:30, 8 o'clock in the evening. We were making dinner. Me and my mom is there and my sister is there too. We were making dinner and standing in the kitchen and I'm getting something out of the oven and my waters just burst and break. No contractions. Labor has not started. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's time. We better go in, which you know now that's not what I teach inside of Unmedicated Academy, but that's what we did. And we ended up eating dinner and then it was like a 30-minute drive and we drove in and they admitted me, of course, because my waters broke. I actually don't even remember if they tested me to check I don't remember, but I do believe there was meconium present in the fluid already at that point. So they may have been kind of treating me as high risk because of that. But what we know is that meconium is normal. It doesn't necessarily mean that baby is in distress. It's not necessarily a high risk situation. And it's more common when you go beyond 40 weeks of pregnancy. And I was 41 and a half weeks. I think she was like 10 days past her due date. So, I get there and they wanted to start Pitocin right away. And what ended up happening, I stood up for myself and I said, no. So that was on my birth plan. I wanted to go into labor naturally. I knew I wanted to do that. So I had to advocate. If I didn't say no, boom, that first one on my birth plan would have been declined, right? Would have not happened. I would have been started on Pitocin right then and there. And so I advocated for myself and I said, I wanted to try to see if my body went into labor naturally on its own first. So I did get that to go into labor naturally. And it did go into labor naturally. Although I ended up starting Pitocin because I was quote unquote stuck at 7 centimeters, but we know that's not really the case. They were just, you know, my waters had been broken. There was meconium. They just wanted to speed things up. So, before they started Pitocin, so it does say try non-medical induction techniques. I should say induction and like augmentation techniques, because technically those are two different things. But what had happened was that, I forgot to mention this part, I had advocated for myself and that OB left. So there was like a shift change and a midwife came on. Now this midwife I had gone over my birth plan with and I liked her. So that goes to show you that the midwife who works in the hospital, even the home birth midwife who seems on board with it, likes to support physiologic birth, she could still be tied by rules and regulations. And this can happen in the hospital and this can happen at home, right? There are, if they're certified, if they're licensed, they have rules that they have to follow. that they will put before some of them won't. I think that's very rare for someone to put the woman before the policy. But all that to say that I had that midwife that I liked, that I brought this birth plan into an appointment and we went over it and she said it looked good. And you're going to see how many of these things I didn't get. So I did get to go into labor naturally. And we did try technically non-medical induction techniques. So this midwife did have me try nipple stimulation before we started Pitocin. I mean, we could have also just waited, you know? So I did kind of technically get those. Still ended up starting Pitocin, which I didn't want. Still got that saline lock, right? I can't remember if I was hooked up to fluids or not because it was so long ago. And I know I was hooked up during the Pitocin, right? I know I was actually attached at the saline lock. You know, it was actually an IV in there. I just can't remember. But they definitely prepped me for the IV, even though that was not on there. So boom, did not get that one. So got one, did not get the next one. Third one says that my membranes not be ruptured or stripped, which that doesn't really make sense. But you can tell there's some things I didn't quite understand here because stripping your membranes would be a little different than rupturing. They happen at different times, but my waters were broken already. So I didn't have to worry about that. So that's neutral. And then I also asked to have a room with Wi-Fi and Skype capabilities so that I could potentially call my husband, which didn't happen. I didn't talk to him actually until after the baby was born. So I'm not sure why that happened. I think that could have been on his end. He wasn't there or something like that. Okay. So out of the first section, I got one. I got to go into labor naturally. Didn't get the second. Third one was neutral. Fourth one we didn't Skype or anything like that. Not a big deal. Now, not a big deal because we're not married anymore, right? And I'm glad he wasn't there. Honestly, my mom was a way better support person than he ever could have been. My mom has had 2 hospital births, no epidural. Okay, next section. During first stage labor, I prefer, which this doesn't really make sense either because first stage labor is early labor. And really what I was meaning was, oh, no, I guess that's right. First stage is laboring. Second stage is birthing. Third stage is the placenta. So I guess I was right. That was fine. So during first stage labor, I prefer, the first thing I have on there is to have intermittent monitoring to allow for as much mobility as possible. Definitely didn't get that. Definitely had continuous fetal monitoring. The next one was minimal vaginal exams, which now I would put none, no vaginal exams. I wouldn't want any. Obviously, I think they checked me I can't remember how frequently, but they did several checks. Like the only time I remember is, I actually can't even remember if they checked me in the beginning. It's been so long, it's been over 10 years. I do remember they checked me like you're 7 centimeters. And then they were like, we'll come back in a couple hours and see how you're doing. And I was still 7 centimeters in a couple hours. That was when they started Pitocin. That's why I remember that, because that was like heartbreaking. I don't want to start Pitocin, right? This was also when active labor started for me. And I was starting not to cope well, because that's what happens. You learn these coping skills and you start applying them in early labor and in early active labor. And you're like, wow, this is great. Well, and then active labor takes it up a notch. I'm not even talking about transition yet. I'm just talking about late active labor. And all of a sudden you're like, I don't know how to do this. I did everything already. And now it's like stuff's gotten real. Especially for the moms where this is long, right? This is long. You thought you were almost done, and all of a sudden you're not almost done, you know? So that's really common. This is something I really, really prepare moms for inside of Unmedicated Academy, is having a really strong toolkit. Okay. So I definitely had a lot of vaginal exams, cervical checks. So didn't get either of those. The next one says natural pain management. Please don't offer pain medications. Please do suggest natural pain management techniques. I did get this. I will say the midwife, even though I still had a lot of routine hospital things like continuous monitoring, cervical checks, the IV, she did not let me get an epidural when I asked. So I did ask for an epidural and she was like, you're so close. I really think you can do this. We can stay on your birth plan. So I always say like, I'm thankful for that, but also all this other stuff still happened, right? I guess it's like as close. Well, I did better. I did better with my second and better with my third, but I don't like to say that I'm thankful for that now, because I do feel like she still put a lot of trauma on me and didn't follow my wishes. So even as though she was supportive of one thing, there was all these other things, which typically happens in the hospital, is their hands are tied. Their hands are tied. Okay. The next one says natural pain management. Oh no, I read that one. So yeah, they didn't offer. Even when I asked, she persuaded me out of it. And she told me I was doing so good and blah, blah, blah. Then I said to change positions and be encouraged to do so, including use of birthing ball and shower. This did happen. No one ever told me to stay in bed. In early labor, they had me walking the halls. They brought in a birth ball. I was in and out of the shower. These nurses were like in and out cleaning, like drying me off, bringing me new towels, like a lot. So they were definitely working for me, which is why a lot of staff like you to be on an epidural, because you are easier when you're in bed. They don't have to come in. They just have to come in and out to monitor you, and they can monitor you on the screen. And that's kind of one reason why. And I know a lot of nurses would say, no, like it's still a lot of work. Like how rude that you would think I would want, like I'm not lazy. Well, I think it's true. Okay. So that was the first stage of labor. I said I was going to say other things that I would put in here, but you'll just have to listen to my birth plan template episode to find out more about that. But I mean, really, I'm covering the big ones. The fetal monitoring, minimal vaginal exams, freedom of movement. Those are the big ones for in labor. Now I do have here. So the birthing, during birthing, I prefer. So this is the next section. This is really important too. I wrote to push instinctively using mother-directed birth breathing to crowning. So I said, I didn't want to push. I want to just breathe my baby down until my baby is crowning, which is a freaking good tactic, a really good tactic. You should not be pushing until you can see your baby's head. This did not happen for me. I remember really distinctly remember squatting on the edge of the bed and breathing. And they're like, no, 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 you need to push. You need to push out. You can push now. Like I'm 10 centimeters now, right? I'm complete. And I was breathing because that's what I had read to do and researched to do. And they were like, oh, she's gotten so good at managing the contractions. Like she's just breathing through everything now. I remember them saying that. I probably felt good that they said that I'd gotten so good at managing labor. But that's what I wanted to do. But they were rushing me. I do remember feeling really rushed. We had, you know, already started Pitocin. I remember that I don't know. Nobody ever told me like your baby is in distress. No, but they were obsessed with keeping the monitors on. Like every time I got in the shower and the monitors would slip, they wanted to like put them on. So I'm not sure if baby was in distress or they were just obsessed with the fetal heart tones, which they are really obsessed. No one ever told me if the baby was in distress or not. So I'm not sure, but Pitocin can stress out your baby. And I do remember them being like, we really need your baby to be born. We really need your baby to be out. And they were rushing me. So that I ended up doing basically coached pushing, not as bad with my, the coached pushing with my second was by far worse. What we ended up doing, the midwife had me in kind of like a semi-reclined position. So I wasn't on my back, but we were doing like, it's called like a tug of war. So she had a sheet and I was pulling it. And that kind of just helps you to focus your pushing kind of in the right way, because they really wanted that baby out. And my baby flew out. She did. There was no two-step birth, nothing. All my babies have done that. They just come right out. I've never had a one step, I've never had a two step birth. With my second, they may have pulled because I was doing typical coach pushing. They may have pulled and done some really gross things. But I know with my first and my third, baby just pew, flew right out, even without coach pushing with my third. So I did not really get that, right? Pushing it instinctively. They kind of let me start with that. And I see that with first-time moms that I support as their doula. They're like, yeah, go ahead and do whatever you want for a little bit, because they know that baby still has a lot of movement to make. But then once baby gets closer, they kind of want, they're like, okay, well, we let you try your way and it didn't work. And that's not true. It did work. It's still working, but they just want you on your back pushing. I said, I prefer to avoid episiotomy. I did not have an episiotomy, so I guess I got that one. And then I said to try alternative labor positions, which we did try a couple. I don't know if we tried any more than those two. I can't remember if I tried hands and knees. I really didn't want to be on my back, which we did do a semi kind of reclined, which is you're still on your tailbone, but you're not like in a lithotomy position. So you still have some gravity working with you. And then following birth, I wrote immediate skin-to-skin contact with newborn procedures delayed until bonding and breastfeeding has occurred. So I wanted immediate skin-to-skin. I did not get that. Then I wanted the cord to be clamped after pulsation has stopped. I did not get that. I wanted to obtain my placenta for encapsulation. I did end up keeping my placenta. What ended up happening was, you know, I had the meconium. So typically with the meconium, they are like ready to resuscitate if needed. They like get ready for that, because I've been at births where there's meconium and they bring more people in. I remember they brought so many people into this room before my baby was born, like while I was pushing, they brought all these people in, and it wasn't a teaching hospital. I just remember there, I don't know, because it was a military hospital, but there was a lot of people there. And I just remember being like very weirded out by it. And they took her immediately. So they cut the cord and they took her away, and she took a while to start crying. So she actually aspirated on the meconium. So she inhaled the meconium. So once they got her crying, they actually took her. So I didn't even actually see her until the next, well, she was born in the afternoon, in the late afternoon, like right before 5 p.m. And I didn't see her, I know, until I went into the postpartum room and then I saw her. This is the most tragic part about my birth. This is the traumatic part. I can talk about it right now, but I've been on other podcasts where I talk about it and I just will cry. I will automatically cry. Right now I'm in like boss mode on, so I won't cry talking about it. But that was by far the most traumatic part of. And the crazy thing is that it wasn't something I realized was so wrong until I had my next baby and I got to hold him right away. And in that moment when I held my second baby right after he was born, which there was a lot of stuff that went wrong with that birth too, but this was all before I became a doula, like immediately after that baby, that second baby was born. But when I held my son, I just cried and cried and cried. Of course, you always cry when you meet your baby. I cried when I finally met my oldest too, like later that evening when I met her in the nursery. But I cried because I was so sad that I didn't get that with my first baby. And I didn't realize how special that was until I experienced it with my second baby. So that's the thing that makes me the most mad. And, you know, probably the Pitocin. The Pitocin made her aspirate. The Pitocin is more stressful. Coached pushing is stressful, right? So that's why with my next, I was like, I'm not having Pitocin. I'm not having an epidural. And then with my third, I really didn't want to do any of it. And I didn't even want to be in the hospital because I know everything that I wrote on this birth plan would have just happened by default at home. But I couldn't have the home birth with my third. So I took things into my own hands and I said, I'm going to do everything different. I'm not going to let anyone tell me what to do. This is where I finally put my people pleasing down and I learned my rights and I learned actually what all of my options were. And that is how you have a hospital birth that feels more like a home birth. That is where you actually have the hospital birth that is empowering, because you supported physiology. It wasn't just that you somehow started this medicalized birth and molded it into something that resembles unmedicated birth, and you ended up suffering through and pushing through to the end without an epidural. That wasn't it. That wasn't what I envisioned when I thought of my beautiful, beautiful birth experience. And even still, there are things that I know would be better if I had had my third baby at home. But with my third, I got, I think, the best you can get in that kind of medicalized setting. Although I will say some of my clients have had better births than me. Clients who have caught their own babies, who have had pain-free births. We've had several clients catch their own babies, or their partner, or their one was a sister, caught the baby. So it is possible. A lot of the times it has to do with finding that unicorn provider as well, which is another thing that we talk about a lot on the podcast. I did skip over one last part for baby I prefer, and it says breastfeeding only, no formula, bottles, or pacifiers. I should have also put my preferences for vaccines and the vitamin K and the erythromycin. We ended up not doing any of those. And I actually found another paper in her baby box that had like all of her appointment information on it. And it was like decline, 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 decline for every single one. So at least I'm very proud of myself and thankful that I knew that before I had a baby. And I can thank my mom for that. Because that was just something I didn't have to learn more to do better, right? I didn't have to trial and error. Like I had to trial and error my first two births. So that was it. That was my birth plan. I didn't get very much on there, but I did get to the end without an epidural. I did have labor start naturally. And I guess that is more than some moms that walk into the hospital with a birth plan can say, right? Of course, we absolutely can do better. And again, it's not about the birth plan. Yes, the birth plan is a great tool to communicate with, but you also need to communicate with your care providers before and have these conversations and figure out where they fall and maybe fire a provider and move on to a better provider, or know how to advocate like heck when you're in labor. Better than that, you can't really advocate when you're in labor. It's harder. Depending on, you can advocate. I've seen my clients advocate for themselves. It's once the provider gets coercive, that's when it gets hard to advocate for yourself when you're in labor. So that's why you really need to have your partner on board and knowing what to do as well. All right. I hope you liked that episode. It was really cool for me to look back and see this birth plan. If you want more tips on what to include in your birth plan, be sure to listen to the episode that I linked. You can get my birth plan template. Even better, just get inside of Unmedicated Academy. I will teach you everything you need to know. Because that's the thing, is the birth plan is the tool, but you also need to get all that pre-knowledge done. That was the mistake here that I made, is I had a pretty good birth plan. Like honestly, there's all the big things on here I covered. And I didn't get it because I didn't understand the whys behind. I didn't truly understand all of my options, right? I didn't understand what to do if I got stuck. I didn't research that part, right? I didn't know that there are things you can do to encourage baby's position, right? You can wait, things like that. So that's everything I teach inside of Unmedicated Academy right now. Enrollment is closing for July moms. And this episode actually isn't coming out for another week. So hopefully enrollment's not closed by the time you're listening to this. But August moms, for sure, time to enroll this month at the time of this recording. July moms, let's chat. Maybe it's not too late to get you in. I love when moms start sooner rather than later. I hate getting the DMs in my inbox with moms who are 36 weeks and they're just now thinking about their birth prep. That is not enough time to, one, do the physical prep that your body needs with like red raspberry leaf tea and dates and walking and stretching. And it's not enough time to learn about birth and your options and how to support physiology and how to manage labor without drugs, to learn about that and to have it sink in enough for you to be able to implement it, right? This is kind of what my experience was, right? I learned about it, but not at a depth where I was able to apply it to my birth. So this is what I help moms with. And we do a full immersion. So you're not just learning, you're learning and you're applying it to your birth. And we start that by advocating in our prenatal care. And then you get really good at it by the time it's time to give birth. If you enjoyed this episode, I know you're gonna love my birth program. Unmedicated Academy is a comprehensive birth education that is not only going to have you feeling prepared, educated, and confident for your birth, but you'll also walk away knowing all of your options, all of your birthrights, and have killer advocacy skills so that you hold the power in your birth. The podcast is just a little taste of what you'll get inside the program. Are you ready to go all in? You can learn more about Unmedicated Academy at fiercelizzie.com/academy.